Okay, sorry for the delay while we dealt with our technical challenges. Welcome to Blob or Not to Blob. My name is Dan Holm. I'm a SharePoint MVP, 5 years, and am the Chief SharePoint Evangelist for AvePoint. So my job is every day to help the community succeed with SharePoint and to align SharePoint with their business objectives so that the service delivers value to their organizations. And as I visit customers, one of the conversations that comes up over and over and over is about storage optimization, capacity management, and blob externalization specifically. So in this short session today, we're going to try to cram in sort of the guidance that I give to customers in hopes that it provides some value to you. And this usually is about a 45-minute talk, and we've got about 20 to do it, so we'll be whipping through this today. But luckily, the guidance is pretty straightforward. We're going to be looking at what blobs are to make sure everyone's up to speed with the basic issue. And then we'll be looking at what their impact on your environment, options for externalizing blobs, and what blobs mean to the bigger picture of information lifecycle management in your organization. So starting with the fundamental, which I think everyone in here is probably familiar with, and that is that by default, when documents are stored in SharePoint, they are stored in the SQL database. So your document is actually stored in the SQL database as what is called a binary large object, or blob. If we were to look inside a SharePoint content database, this is what we would see. We would see a series of tables, starting with the all user data table, which is right here. This contains all of the metadata that is in the document library, the user columns, but it does not actually contain the document itself. The document itself is referred to in the all docs table. That has metadata that is internal that SharePoint uses to keep track of the document. The blob itself is stored in the all docs streams table. So when we look in this table, we can see the limited set of internally used metadata, basically identifiers for the document, and then the blob itself, the binary large object. So when you're looking at a SharePoint document library, you're actually running effectively a stored procedure, a set of procedures that are touching three tables, all user data, all docs, and then all doc streams. And then if you have versioning turned on, as you put versions in, older versions metadata that would normally be in all docs is put in all doc versions. So that contains some of that older metadata, mostly again internally used metadata. And again, the actual blobs of those old versions are stored in all doc streams. So that's what's going on inside of the content database. And as you look at typical content database in a SharePoint environment, you find that up to 80% of the content database size is actually the blobs. So if you're doing document-centric collaboration, a lot of your database size is taken up by these blobs. And one of the challenges is that over the life cycle of an organization, as more content is added to SharePoint, more storage is being used, and typically a lot of that legacy data is not active data. So the amount of storage is increasing almost exponentially, but the amount of actively used data is probably not increasing very much. And so you're continuing to store more and more data in SharePoint. You're putting more and more of a burden on your content databases, and that's the basic issue. Now, as you look at how you calculate storage needs, keep in mind that it's not just about the documents and the blobs themselves. It's about all the other things that are impacting storage, like, for example, versioning, having versioning on, recycle bin storage, indexes, and transaction logs. So the transaction logs in a very busy collaborative environment are filling up as well within your storage. And so typically we look at a multiplier of about 3.5 to look at what we would consider real content and what the impact on your storage really is. So there's a lot of impact. Now, when Microsoft released SharePoint 2010, they kept the same sizing guidance that had been around since SharePoint 2007. You should be familiar with these numbers, I assume. 200 gigabytes was the guidance for a content database size unless you were doing a record center, and a site collection they were guiding us towards 100 and 200 gigabytes. And this led us as consultants into a real quandary, because most of our customers, particularly big ones, were looking at amounts of data significantly bigger than 200 gigabytes. We have customers who are talking about terabytes of data. And we actually had one very large financial services organization that was looking at putting 50 terabytes of data into SharePoint. And Microsoft Consulting actually said, no, we're not going to support that. And the customer's response was to turn away and start looking at Documentum and completely competitive products. And it had nothing to do with what SharePoint really could or couldn't do. It was just Microsoft's support stance at the time. And Microsoft was feeling this pain as well. So they realized that their ability to support what customers needed was starting to diverge. The customers were pushing SharePoint in ways that the product had not been fully designed or tested to support. And Microsoft then, after RTM, threw a lot of resources into improving scalability support of SharePoint. Because they needed to be able to say, you can do this with SharePoint, and then they needed to be able to stand behind that with Microsoft support. And so it's not just something where they can magically pull numbers out of the air. They have to be really confident that we as customers can succeed. So it took them a couple of months to do this, and in early last month, Microsoft extended the guidance of SharePoint, and they still start with the 200 gigabyte content database size limit, because that's what SharePoint can do with completely out-of-the-box tools. It's a very low-risk sizing guidance. But you can go up to 4 terabytes now, as far as a support perspective, for all collaborative kinds of work. So with 4 terabytes, that's a lot of data for a single content database, because of course you can have multiple content databases in a web app, multiple web apps in a SharePoint service. So that's a lot, and then the limit is completely removed for archive scenarios, which Microsoft defines as document and record center templates, where only 5% of the content is really active and the rest is basically just stored. So notice all of these new limits have asterisks next to them, which is that these limits are supported assuming you have architected your environment correctly. So this means that you're going to need to, first of all, make sure that your performance is good, which is defined as 0.25 IOPS per gigabyte stored, and they recommend 2 IOPS per gigabyte stored. So in other words, you have to have really good storage infrastructure behind SharePoint to support the responsiveness that SharePoint needs for a large environment. And if you do the math, especially with 2 IOPS per gigabyte, 2 IOPS per gigabyte times 4 terabytes is basically not achievable with most of today's hardware. And that's a good thing, because in every other platform that Microsoft releases, like let's say Active Directory, for example, they set scaling guidance for hundreds and millions of objects, which none of us ever need. So their limits are far beyond what we need and can achieve. And finally, SharePoint's in the same boat. Microsoft will support us beyond what we can actually do, and for most of us, what we would actually need in our environments. Microsoft has now set the support bar way ahead of what we need, which is a good thing. Now it's up to us to architect our environments correctly and to align that with our business requirements. The site collection size, they still recommend 100 gigabytes, again, primarily because certain out-of-the-box APIs, backup and restore, things like that, work better at that size, but they will support you up to the size of your content database. So you can have super big site collections as well, as long as you've architected correctly, which in this case, not only is performance, but is making sure that you can support your backup and restore SLAs, your high availability SLAs, your disaster recovery SLAs. So you just need to take the responsibility to look at the whole environment and make sure that with the size data that you're looking at scaling to, you can meet all of your needs. There is one other limit that got added, and this is a very important one, because over the last 6 months or so, I was involved with Microsoft knowing that they were going to come out with this. One of the reasons that they were giving us such low limits before was because Microsoft support was finding that people who had large content databases were having trouble applying patches and upgrades. And it had nothing to do with the amount of data in the database. It had to do with number of rows in the database. And after a certain number of rows, patches and upgrades were either not being able to be applied fast enough, or they were actually having problems with patches and upgrades. And so Microsoft was just taking a shortcut and giving us a size limit, when what really we needed was guidance as to the number of items per content database. So that was added, and that is 60 million items per content database. So that would be documents, list items, across all site collections within a single content database. Now keep in mind that Microsoft supports up to 30 million items in a single list or library. This is across all lists and libraries, all site collections in a single content database. And so this was actually one of the behind the scenes real issues that they were trying to solve is at what point do we have to tell people your content database is too full rather than too big? Does that make sense? All right. as you look at your environment and you think about how big your content databases are, I find customers sort of fall into two boats. They either have very small content databases, but they know that they want to do a lot more with SharePoint, so when they look into their plans, they're going to need a lot more storage, or they've already got terabytes and terabytes of data. And the obvious question is, what then should I do to improve both the storage and performance story of my SharePoint service, which you can do by externalizing blobs. Let me make a quick look at time here. Okay. So you have the option of keeping the blobs, the document storage, within SQL or externalizing it. Bottom line is there's a lot of good reasons to externalize it, but there are a couple of good reasons for keeping it in SQL. Mainly that it's one container. You've got one content database to worry about, backup, restore, monitor, recover. It's simple. And if you're using really good storage for your content databases, tier one storage, you're getting all the performance benefits of that as users access data in your SharePoint environment. And one key piece is that when users go to access documents from SharePoint, if they're accessing documents repeatedly, SQL caching can actually improve the performance of that type of access, particularly with small documents and particularly with read documents. Now, aside from that, keeping blobs in SQL has a lot of very big disadvantages. First of all, obviously storage cost. If you're putting expensive tier one storage behind SQL, you're now eating that up with a bunch of blobs, many of which are not active and actively used. And remember, that means your content, your transaction logs, all those things are getting eaten up. Your backup sizes are bigger, so you're having to think about your storage for your backups. And you really have to think about your SLAs for backup and recovery. I've had customers whose driving requirement was, we can't finish our backups in time overnight. Or when a user wants to restore data, we're having to recover, you know, a 500 gigabyte content database, and just pulling that back is taking too long before we even pull out the one thing that that user wants to recover. SQL operations are penalized. Things like locking and reindexing are a problem. Performance is a problem. We'll come back to that in just a second. If you have large documents that users are accessing as part of your SharePoint service, that will actually be slower with the blobs in SQL than in most cases having it outside of SQL. Also, another performance point to keep in mind is when users add a document to SharePoint, keep in mind it's actually getting written twice. It gets put into the transaction log, and then it gets committed as part of the transaction into your main tables. And so if you're dealing with large documents, you're actually bloating the transaction log. You're taking double the performance on the SQL server as that document is getting written twice effectively. So you have the option of externalizing blobs, which simply allows the SharePoint servers to take the metadata and continue to store it in the all-user data table, and the actual blob and put it on some other storage platform, which might be direct attached storage, NAS, SAN, cloud, you name it. And you have two basic ways of doing that, EBS, which was part of SharePoint 2007, and RBS, which is part of SharePoint 2010. Both of these are interface specifications that Microsoft has provided. EBS is part of SharePoint, RBS is part of SQL, and both need what are called providers to actually interface between SharePoint and the storage platform. So you would need a provider to talk to your disk storage if you're doing direct storage for your blob store. You would need a provider to talk to Amazon or to Azure or to your SAN or NAS device. So there's different APIs. They're architected a little bit differently, but functionally they're basically doing the same thing. And once you've implemented remote blob store or extended blob store, you look at your all docs table, you see a null where the blob used to be, and instead there's a link to the blob in its other store. So and if we were to look in the blob store, we would, and this is a file stream provider here, we would actually see the GUID of the document on that storage platform. So the blob is now externalized. When you do externalize, everything to SharePoint is exactly the same. Indexing, searching, check-in, check-out, versioning. SharePoint doesn't really know what's going on with the storage platform because there's this layer in between that includes the EBS or RBS components. So SharePoint continues to do everything that it always did just the same. Nothing changes in that case. But you get some big advantages. Your storage costs might decrease, assuming your blob store is on a cheaper storage platform. Performance can improve significantly. This is just a quote from MSDN that sort of emphasizes that. And performance increases potentially in a couple of ways. First of all, for reads with large documents, as I mentioned, that actually, given similar storage characteristics, will perform better outside of SQL than inside SQL. Writes will perform better. As we mentioned, they don't get written twice now because you're not putting them in the transaction log. And most importantly, in my opinion, all other activity by users in any part of the content database or even on the SQL server will improve. And here's why. Let's imagine that I am doing some kind of document manipulation and we're putting the blobs in SQL. So I'm putting a penalty on that SQL server by my activity. You're doing something completely different, not even document related. You're looking at a list and pulling up a view. Because I'm putting a hit on the server doing my document related activity, your performance decreases as well. And this is something that isn't really emphasized enough as people talk about blobs, because people talk about the performance of one blob and whether it's faster or slower, if it's externalized or internalized. The reality is any blobs in your SQL server in most real-world scenarios where multiple users are actually using your SharePoint server at the same time is going to penalize performance. So you might have heard about the idea of, you know, anything greater than a megabyte you should externalize, anything smaller you should keep inside. That's true if you only have one user. Right? Does that make sense? And I think most organizations should look basically at moving significantly smaller blobs out of SQL and because of the performance impact there. And Microsoft has a white paper that you can download that will show you sort of the ideas of what happens. But you can see here that you get significant performance gains across the board. And even just sort of with standard SharePoint usage, 25% performance gain when you have multiple users accessing the environment by externalizing blobs. So you get big performance benefits, and that's one of the key points here. Plus, you get access to your blob storage platform features. So if you're storing your blobs on a SAN device, that SAN device might very well have deduplication capabilities and differential compression. And all of a sudden, your storage footprint gets even smaller because your storage platform can now do something that SQL can't. Your storage platform might be able to encrypt data, which in some compliance scenarios might be important to you. Your storage platform may be able to do things with snapshots or disaster recovery and replication that SQL can't do. So you get all these great features of your storage platform, whatever that might be, and you get it's much easier to restructure content. Let's say you have a set of sites and you decide this site needs to be up here and you're from your architecture perspective. That's much faster because you can now move just the metadata in the SQL environment, keeping the links to the blob store, and the blobs just stay where they are. And so you now have the ability to move content around much better. And in fact, we have a number of customers who, as part of their 2007 to 2010 migration, they're externalizing their blobs in 2007 first, so that as they do the migration to SharePoint 2010, they're not having to drag those blobs with them. And it ends up being significantly faster as well. So on the slide deck, which we will make available to you, I'll figure out with our team where we can post it for you, but there's a number of slides that sort of give you pluses and minuses of the different platforms and all those things. And as you look at EBS or RBS, as you look at RBS, Microsoft has given us the file stream provider for free, which is great, and it works, but it's not particularly feature-rich. It's not highly performant, and it's a little bit difficult to implement with lots of scripts and all those kinds of things. So you're going to probably want to be looking at third-party solutions for the provider, and that these are the factors you want to look at. Regardless of who you're looking at, you want to look at performance. You want to look at whether it goes to the blob store that you want for your environment, NetApp, EMC, Amazon, whatever the case may be. And look at the rules that can be implemented by your provider. Most providers really give you a rule that says if the blob is bigger than X, it gets externalized. If it's smaller than X, it doesn't. Certain tools will give you richer capabilities of saying if a blob is this content type, we want to move it here. Or if this blob hasn't been accessed in a certain period of time, we want to externalize it. So look at the rules that are supported, and very importantly, look at the manageability. And what I mean by this is, it's one thing to externalize your blobs. You get all these benefits of performance and storage costs and all that, but you also have to consider backup and restore, high availability. You look at the entire picture of your storage management life cycle as you're looking at the tools that are out there. Their bottom line here is it's definitely possible to architect a really good storage solution with one of these blob externalization APIs. And so I want to leave you with that. Unfortunately, because of the technical difficulties, I've actually got to run. I'm getting my 1 minute warning here. And I really apologize for having to sort of blaze. But what I'll do is I'll put my email address up. So first of all, don't hesitate to email me. Secondly, you can find me often at the AvePoint booth, and we'll be doing a book signing tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So I'll be there not only signing my book, but I can answer your questions. And please don't hesitate to email me, because I do feel very guilty about having to run. But I want to help you with this discussion in your organizations, because I know it's one that can often get tied down with all kinds of issues. So I'm happy to help you. Thank you guys for coming, and have a great afternoon.